is our debate. The two parties in tonight's debate are Wayne Kosky, a PE of 911outreach.org, and Barbara Honegger. The proposition for tonight's debate is that a large plane impacted the Pentagon. Craig has volunteered to take the timing for tonight's debate, and so we'll proceed then with Wayne getting ready for the affirmative. Wayne, you ready?
This is Barb. May I just ask Craig? Craig, would you be willing to let all both of us know when there's, regardless of the segment, when there's 2 minutes left and 1 minute left?
That was part of the arrangement. Ken, you mentioned that you wanted me to do it a certain way. I don't know if you want me to, if that's flexible or whatever. You asked me to do it for 1 minute for the first thing and then 30 seconds for the other one.
Yeah, the 7 minute, the constructor will have a 1 minute warning, and the other items following that will each have a 30 second warning. If you're called for time, you may finish your sentence, but you shouldn't take more than a few seconds to do so. Otherwise, we'll have to look at time penalties if people go over time, okay?
A time penalty? What happens to it?
You don't want to know, Barbara. You don't want to know.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to ask that question.
Bad.
Listen to that. Okay. All right. So if we're ready, then, Wayne, are you ready to proceed with the affirmative?
Yes, I'm ready. And if you want, you can start the clock. Tell me when.
Yeah. Give me 5 seconds so it's nicely on the sixth. Okay.
I'm sorry. Wait, stick
right. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Wayne, your time starts now. Go ahead.
Yes. I want to thank the teleconference organizers for this opportunity to debate what occurred at the Pentagon. Before I begin, I want to remind people that we'll be talking from a series of slides with page numbers. These slides are available in the meeting announcement, and if people should go on mute, it's quite distracting. A large plane hit the Pentagon is the most supportable hypothesis. Before I get into the details of the evidence, it is imperative that I share some background on this presentation. While there is a large amount of agreement about what happened at the World Trade Center, the Pentagon is much more divisive. The concept of this debate began after an email thread dealing with the implications of confirmation bias. That is, biases where a listener accepts information that supports one own perspective and ignores other information that does not fit. As I researched 9/11, I have found these biases within myself. I've observed that once I settle into a perspective, it is difficult to change. In the past, I adopted positions as a result of listening to statements of respected individuals, people who I believe should have done their homework before advocating a position. In order to change a perspective, a listener needs to hear something new and unexpected. They need to investigate it with an open mind. I hope some of you will hear something new and ask yourself some probing questions. The material in this debate was the result of my having to carefully evaluate what I would say in a cable access show. I would be presenting what I will call my statements, and I'd be saying them in public, so I needed to make sure that they were supportable. I wasn't going to be able to fall back on, well, someone said it, but I didn't look into it. Such a weak position would have undermined the whole series I was preparing. Initially, I was going to lay out the different hypotheses for what happened at the Pentagon and go through the evidence. My intention was to ridicule the large plane hypothesis. However, as I developed the material for the program, I found that I could not. All the evidence I found was either supportive of a large plane or neutral. There was nothing from the witnesses and the photographs of that day that contradicted a large plane impact. I found this very disturbing. I had to question whether the people in the 9/11 truth movement I respected had actually looked at the evidence. So let's begin. Let's go to slide 3. Suddenly, without warning, a single large aircraft flew over the stop traffic on Washington Boulevard on the west side of the Pentagon. The plane flew low to the ground, coming from the southwest over Columbia Pike while descending continuously. The large plane remained above the pristine lawn until it impacted a Tower 14. The engines impacted a retaining wall and the diesel generator. A distance between these impact points was approximately equal to the distance between the engines of a 757. Most of the airframe structure crashed into the first floor wall. The impacts created a huge fireball with a lot of debris traveling northwards and some falling onto Washington Boulevard. The impact was seen by many witnesses from the west side of the Pentagon. Slide 4, resulting damage. There was an 80-foot opening in the first floor wall. There was a 16-foot opening in the second floor wall. There was limited aircraft debris outside of the building. Most of the visible debris was north of the impact point. However, there was very little debris in front of the impact point and no debris south of the impact point. As we all know, the location of the debris within the Pentagon itself was not documented in any way except the incompatible locations of the cockpit voice recorders and the flight data recorders. Slide 5, the damage. Evidence shows that the aircraft momentum was sufficient to knock out an 80-foot section of the west wall. Many of the first floor columns were missing, bent, or stripped. This would be consistent with the impact of something with a substantial mass. Impacts with the light poles would have been survivable. The plane only needed to travel 950 feet in 1.25 seconds. You know, possibly the plane was targeting the second floor and the aircraft lost more altitude than expected as a result of hitting the light poles, and thus impacted the first floor. We don't really know that, what they were really targeting. Slide 6, witnesses. Please go on mute. Okay? After about 180 witnesses are on record near the Pentagon shortly after the event. Details differ, but most report one aircraft flying towards the Pentagon. Distant witnesses from Roslyn and St. Barnabas Road report a plane impacting. They saw it clearly from a distance. The only other aircraft seen immediately after the impact was the well-documented C-130. After the initial event, witnesses would have been hyper-alert for any other unusual activity, but there wasn't. There were no other planes except the C-130. These 180 witnesses are adequate for establishing in broad terms what happened. Slide 7. The issues that I'm not addressing. There's very little time in this debate to cover the many topics about a single large plane. Because I'm not arguing that the, quote, large plane was AE-77, I will not address the radar tracking. It's not necessary because, as others have pointed out, another plane could have been substituted. The flight data and cockpit voice recorders are of the wrong type for commercial American Airlines aircraft in service in 2001. AA insists their flight data recorders were solid state. The data from the alleged flight recorders, therefore, is just suspect, but they are not even critical to the question, did a large aircraft hit the Pentagon? Accurate security camera videos would be nice if they documented the impact without raising questions related to their authenticity. Issues like the September 12th date and the image overlap problem raised by Massimo Mazzucco in his new
Pearl Harbor.
Thank you. Point those out. For me, the most troubling aspect is that the aircraft is completely horizontal in the final seconds. This is inconsistent with the observations of the witnesses who report a continuous bypass with only some amount of banking, not leveling off. Remembering, leveling off would have added unnecessary forces to the plane's already overtaxed structure, risking a successful completion of the mission and reducing the airspeed, just as the engines were being ramped up in the final seconds before impact to maximize the kinetic energy when the plane hit the building. I will not cover how the aircraft could have been controlled. I believe the 9/11 truth community is in agreement that Hani Honduras could not have done this. This ends my constructive stage of the debate. Thank you.
All right.
All right.
Thank you, Wayne. Barbara, you ready with the negative?
Yes.
Okay. Time starts now. Go ahead.
Time starts now. Thank you so much, everybody. I've been hoping for a debate like this for years, and now it's finally happening. So thank you so much for everyone being here. I'm going to start out by summarizing what I call the Pentagon official story light. And this is the position that Wayne takes in this debate. And that position, official story light, is at the nose of a large plane. We agree it was almost certainly not Flight 77, but the nose of a large plane hit at a specific location. This is in his Flight 16. That it hit in Wedge 1 at a specific column 14, that it penetrated the wall and caused approximately 90 to 95% of the interior damage only on the ground floor, just a very small amount on the second floor. That is Wayne's position in his slides. So we are now going to point out that the official story itself is identical to this, except that the official story claims that that same plane was indeed Flight 77. That's the only major difference. So going to my slides, and I hope everyone has them up, I'd like to point out that at the very first Pentagon press briefing, which was September 12th, the day after the attack, there was no mention whatsoever of the official story of Flight 77 or even of a 757 hitting the building, which is quite shocking and surprising. It's obvious that there first had to be a lot of cleanup of non-supporting evidence before the official story was finally released at the Pentagon press briefing, officially on September 15th. And, of course, the first cleanup of non-supporting evidence was the collapse of the wall over the alleged impact point to begin with on 9/11 itself, a little after 10 a.m. in the morning. My slide 5, I hope everyone has up those slides, and if not, you can listen to the audio and see them later. The alleged plane penetration path, just so that you see it, it's that white arrow. And you will notice that that it's almost all in wedge 1 with just a little bit in the wedge 2 in the C ring. And April Gallup's death, just for the record, is over in wedge 2 in the outer E ring, not anywhere close to the alleged plane penetration path. So going to slide 7, I'm now going to demonstrate that the wall damage, well, I should say that the claim, the main claim of both the official story and official story light, which is the position of the other debater in this debate, is the claim that all of the physical evidence lines up perfectly, based mainly upon the claim that the first floor wall damage centered on column 14 in wedge 1 could have been caused by a large plane impact. I'm now going to demonstrate that the wall damage and the internal damage inside the building, as cataloged and recorded by the Pentagon Building Performance Report, could not possibly have been due to any large impact at column 1, column 14, and wedge 1. The Pentagon Building Performance Report, based on the analysis of the interior damage after the fact, states that the top of the fuselage was at most only 20 feet above the ground. The most important fact proving that no large plane, 757 or otherwise, could have hit at column 14 in wedge 1, is the fact that at the official story alleged speed of over 550 miles per hour, coming in effectively level just above the ground, it could not possibly have gotten any lower due to the ground effect than one half of the wingspan of 124-foot 757 or comparably sized large plane, meaning that the lowest that it could have impacted the building would have been approximately 62 feet above the ground or into at the lowest the fourth floor of the five floors. And yet, the after impact damage report shows that almost 100% of the damage is in the ground floor. So that alone proves that that should not be the case. Now I'd like to move to slide 10. And you will see a red circle on slide 10, which represents the official story light as well as the official story alleged impact point coming in at a diagonal angle of the nose of a large plane. And what you're going to notice there is that the second floor column is actually still in place, as is at least on the right side of that T on the second floor with the blacked out windows, the missing windows on either side. That at least on the right side that the second floor is still in place. That red circle is literally the bullseye of the both official story light and official story alleged impact point, and the fact that the vertical column is still in place and the floor on the right at the very least is absolute proof that no large plane going at almost 560 miles per hour could possibly have resulted in the vertical column in the right floor of the second floor still being in place. Physically impossible. The 6-foot cable spools had to be cleared. When you go to slide 12, you see that for yourself because as you'll see, that the plane is 156 feet in length, and if the spools were much closer to the wall, the plane coming in level absolutely would have had to clear the 6-foot-high spools. All right, in slide 13, a very important slide of a composite photograph by a colleague, a digital photo analyst colleague of Terry Nissan. And,
1 minute.
Now, wait a minute. What was that?
1 minute.
Oh, thank you. You will see that Wayne and I actually disagree over the amount of space. He says that there's 80 feet between of missing space, and I say 50, and we can get into that later during the rebuttal. Okay. The windows as well as the columns load out and not in, which is physically impossible. If hit by a huge impactor going at 560 miles per hour. And moving on to the light poles, it's physically impossible that the light poles could have been hit by the leading edge of the wings that still were full of jet fuel. They were flying fuel bombs. And those wings not being sheared off at a very minimum, non-explosive jet fuel pouring out over the lawn, which did not happen. And as we know, the story that was given by a critical witness, Lloyd England, is definitely false. So I will continue the next segment. Thank you.
Thank you, Barbara. All right. We're ready to move on to our first rebuttal, and that will be Wayne to rebut the... I'm sorry, it'll be... Wayne to rebut the negative. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yes, so thank you, Barbara, for going through all this. I'll start with slide 16 in my data, in my pack. The large plane impact is really supportable, and the plane impacted at an angle of 42 degrees, knocked down the newly hardened wall. If we go to slide 17, we have the overview of where things were located. We've got the column 14 right in front of the tree, or right behind the tree. We've got the gouge, the retaining wall. We've got the diesel construction generator on the right-hand side. And those are the key things that we're going to be taking a look at. Slide 18 shows the flight impact. It comes over the cloverleaf. If we go to slide 19, which has shows you where Daryl Donnelly was when he took a lot of the pictures. Many of those are those that we are actually going to be using here. And you can see that he where he was located, and he saw the plane come from right over his driver's side, and you can see where he was located in order for him to be taking all the photographs that he did in the 5 minutes or so that he was there. So let's move on to slide 22. This is an impact point showing the Pentagon, the five rings. We'll skip past that. Slide 23 shows a very level flight, American Airlines 767 approaching the Pentagon, just showing from a scale the issue of ground effect, as I've been told, is not relevant when you are flying with your flaps down and traveling at these speeds here. So that is a point that we may need to clarify with others. Slide 24 is a 15 long. You can see that there's no degree of significance in front of the wall. The engines were 4.5 feet below the fuselage, but that still left about 3 feet of space. Now, if we go to slide 25, we have the kind of the dimensions. Barbara had mentioned the impact point of 20 feet above the ground. That was the ASCE's best estimate based on 90 to 95% of the interior damage in the first ground level. The 757's body is 12.5 feet. There's about 7.5 feet below the aircraft body if it's impacted at 20 feet. And the engine extends 4.5 feet below the aircraft body, leaving about 3 feet for clearance, which is why there's no markings on the lawn, with the exception of hitting the retaining wall and the diesel generator. slide 26 basically shows the where the impact point is. And when we go to slide 27, you can see the location of the debris. If it was flying north, because there's northward momentum of the aircraft. Slide 28 shows that if there had
30 seconds.
Thank you. Slide 28 shows that if it had been a straight-on impact, it would have, explosives or something else, the debris would have come out in all directions, and that's not what we see. Slide 29 shows the plane impact area against the wall, and if you actually look at the images that Barbara has said are columns that are sticking up out of the ground, you can actually see fire underneath them. So I think that's where I'll stop for now. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Link. Barbara, it's your turn now to refute the positive. You have 4 minutes. Go ahead.
Okay.
Wait a second. Wait a second, Ken. Ken.
Okay.
I have that as 3 minutes. Oh, I'm sorry. Never mind.
No.
My mistake.
4 minutes. 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Before we begin, there's rattling on the phone. Could everybody be sure and mute before we begin?
Yes. If you can, please mute your phone. If you're not one of the contestants here, please mute your phone because we are having to get an interference here.
Tell them it's by star 6.
Star 6 to mute your phone if you're not one of the contestants. Thank you.
Yes. And I would request that Wayne do that as well, because when he was speaking, there was a lot of static.
Okay. Well, it seems like the static has disappeared, in my view. But maybe others can still hear it, but I don't hear any further static.
Okay.
Okay. Go ahead, Barbara. Thank you.
All right. Yes, I'm going to actually continue with my slides, and the reason is because I take the negative position that a large plane hit the Pentagon at column 14, which is Wayne's position, the official story line. I'm going to continue with my slides because my negative position is all rebuttal. I would like to say that the ground effect is relevant for a plane going at high speed, any large plane close to the ground. Ralph Kolstad flew the physical plane that the official story claims was Flight 77 on 9/11, and he said he absolutely could not do so himself. All right, so I'm going to my slide 20, and slides 20 and 21 and subsequent slides are a demonstration that the evidence that a large plane could not have penetrated the newly hardened Wedge 1 wall. And the one military test that we have effectively shows that nothing penetrated the wall, and you can see that in slide 22 and slide 23, and the effect of that is nothing like the fireball in the famous five-frame fireball. Then I'm going to move on to just pointing out that the official story and official story light also depend upon the claim that there was only one major explosion that was simultaneous with an alleged impact at column 14 and wedge 1. And the slides beginning with slide 26, going through a number of slides, prove that there were multiple explosions independent of any possible impact. All right, and then we are going to move to the alleged exit hole in the C-ring. Now, Wayne does not address this, but others who advocate for the official story light do, and it's very important to note that cannot be true. That even if a plane was able to get, a large plane was able to get through the external wall, that it couldn't have been responsible only for damage through the alleged C-ring and so-called exit hole, because I have cataloged, including personal interviews with witnesses inside the Pentagon, and have published that there was major destruction, fire, and death in the inner two rings beyond the C-ring as well. All right, I'm going to go to, I know that Wayne doesn't address it, but others in the movement who take the position of official story like do, the absolute inauthenticity and accuracy and relevance of the FDR data. And I'm glad to see that Wayne does agree, as do, as I understand it, the consensus panel, the position that I take,
that is based upon the press release by American Airlines itself shortly after the attacks, that the alleged cockpit voice recorder and therefore also flight data recorder, because they're both in the tail of a plane, cannot have been from any American Airlines plane that was flying on 9/11. It's the wrong kind. It was a solid-state version, and the cockpit voice recorder that was allegedly found in the rubble was a magnetic tape recorder, a very different kind. All right. Then I'm going to move on. The authenticity, accuracy, and relevance of the radar data has been, thank you, has been pointed out to be problem fumbled, certainly false, by Robin Gordon, who is on this call, and I give the site that he gave me for that. That leaves the witnesses. And the interesting thing about the witnesses, yes, there are about 180 witnesses, but because they're all over the map, you have to, everyone who looks seriously at the Pentagon has to sift through the witnesses to find the relevant and most credible witnesses. I have done that, and I find that the path is a north path, not a south path. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. Wayne, you have 3 minutes for counter rebuttal. Go ahead.
Yes, first of all, I think we have to talk about the ground effect issue. And as I understand the argument, a plane can't hit the ground if it's going fast. And so, therefore, it seems that the best thing a pilot can do if he's got it in trouble is go fast and get near the ground, because that means that he can't hit the ground. That sounds to me about as absurd if you actually stop to think about it. Now, a ground effect, when you're trying to land, with your flaps, and all those issues is a factor. But if you want to trim the plane and run the front of the plane onto the runway, I'm absolutely convinced that you can do it at any speed you want. All you got to do is be prepared for it. So let's continue on where I think I left off at slide 29. This is the alleged impact point with the plane superimposed on top of it. Again, I invite you to take a look at the other photos that I don't have in here that show that there's actually you can actually see fire underneath the things that are in fact columns that are banged inward and not columns from the floor that are going outward. If we go to slide. Let's go to slide 31, which has the opening after the fire is extinguished. We have 80 feet that are open, and you can actually see some of the columns that are kind of hanging down. They've been impacted from the right and the front, and they've been pushed to the left and back. And that's the position that they're in. And as I said, you can see fire underneath them when you look at some of the live fire pictures. If we go take a look at the slide 32, you can see you can count the columns. Each one is 10 feet apart. Pardon? So, and if we go to slide 33, what we have, you can see the diagram here for where the columns are. Slide 34 and 35 describe the mass of the building wall, the 80 feet. It's 96 tons of structural mass being impacted by 110 tons of
30 seconds.
And that 100. And what you're having here is people say it's like a beer can hitting the wall. Well, in fact, what you're seeing is not a beer can hitting the wall, but a beer can hitting another beer can, equal mass, effectively. So one's flying at 500 miles an hour. Slide 36 just basically shows the extent of the opening, and slide 38 or 37 shows what a plane infrastructure
looks like.
Okay. So what you're going to see is that the very top of you'll see a very little structural material. Everything is down below, and so that's the top part what damaged the second floor. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Take away. Okay, Barbara, you have 3 minutes to rebut. Go ahead.
Okay. Thank you so much. I would just like to point out that just prior to this debate, Jim Chester sent me, and thank you, Jim. I don't think he's on the call, but he may be listening to this recording later. Jim Chester sent that's a very important article by an aeronautical engineer that I will send the link to, and with everyone's permission, perhaps you could put it in the minutes from this debate, that the ground effect definitely does apply, and that the lowest, that a plane of a wingspan approximately of a 757 or any comparably sized large plane could not get to the ground any closer than approximately the fourth floor up. And yet the Pentagon Building Performance Report, the American Society of Structural Engineers, found that almost 100% of the damage was on the ground floor. So also, Ralph Cole said flew this very physical plane that the official story claims is Flight 77, and he said absolutely that the ground effect does apply and that he could not have flown the plane into the ground floor. And I would take his word for it, seeing as he flew that very physical plane. Okay, what I'd like to do now for the remaining time here is I have a list of rebuttals of some of Wayne's main points. I've made many of them, but there are also some others that I'd like to make. Okay. The next is that he claims that the plane hit the diesel generator. This could not be true if it was anywhere close to the official story, alleged impact time of almost 9:38, because we know the exact time that the diesel generator was hit. Because it generated, it caused the large billowing black smoke cloud, and the initiation time of that is absolutely proven by the digital clock that is embedded in the DoubleTree Hotel security camera video of 9:34 and 10 seconds, which is many minutes before the alleged impact time of the building. And the even Wayne claims in his PowerPoint slides that a large plane, the part of the right wing or the right engine of a large plane allegedly hit the diesel trailer and caused the billowing black smoke cloud.
30 seconds.
Okay, Wayne claims that there's an 80-foot opening. I see only a 50-foot opening. He also claims in his slides that the second floor alleged opening is 16 feet wide. It absolutely isn't, because the vertical column of column 14 on the second floor is still in place, and the column to column is 10 feet. So the maximum width with that vertical column still in place is only 10 feet. It is not 16 feet on the second floor. Thank you.
Time's up.
Thank you, Barbara. Okay, Wayne, you have 90 seconds for a second rebuttal.
Yeah, so I don't know where to begin, so I'll just simply say that the DoubleTree video clock, while it is it's not reliable, I don't know how many people have their digital clocks on their stoves and whatever, set at the wrong time, off by a few minutes. There's no guarantee that is an official time. And I've had this debate with Tim Michael, and he's agreed that is not likely. Secondly, I want to talk about the schools that were in the flight path. The one thing that we do not know about those schools, as shown on slide 40, is where they were in the beginning. Everyone talks about the reason you can't get a plane close to the ground because of the turbulence. We don't know where these schools were. They could have simply been standing up nearby, and the turbulence would have sucked them in to the area behind where the plane was, and that's where they would have ended up. So they didn't have to be hopped over. Again, I'll say that the ground effect is something that can be compensated for by a highly vetted flight path that was done professionally. So I think that hitting the ground, maybe Ralph can't do it, but I think the people who would program flight paths to put his plane on the ground knows.
Time's up.
He just gets feet first.
Okay. Time's up. Thank you.
I guess that's all.
Okay. Thank you. Barbara, you have 90 seconds for your last rebuttal.
Okay. Actually, I'd like to take this time to point out what, with my best understanding, Wayne and I agree on. We agree that a single, only one low-flying plane was destroyed at the Pentagon, because zero witnesses saw two or more low-flying planes approach the building simultaneously or near simultaneously, so that's important. We disagree on the flight path and whether it hit the building at the official story location. We agree that it was not Flight 77 based on a number of reasons. We agree that the alleged debris found inside the Pentagon is not documented. We agree that there was a major internal ground floor explosion independent of any impact. And you can see that in Wayne's slide 39. It's also in my behind the smoke curtain. And we agree that the plane was almost certainly not under the control of the official story alleged pilot, Connie Honjour, or any other pilot, and was likely under some kind of remote control. I would like to point out in closing that the main finding of my work in Behind the Smoke Curtain is pre-placed inside explosives, the same as the real story of the World Trade Center, with a plane approach and visible destruction of a plane as the mere cover cause for the subsequent collapse, in the case of the World Trade Center and the Twin Towers and in the Pentagon, of the wall section of Wedge 1. But it's important to remember the principle of severability.
Time's up.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Wayne, you have 2.5 minutes for a final summary. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you. I've heard some of our 9/11 truth colleagues say that support of a large plane impact at the Pentagon should be considered, quote, as an organized effort to steer the truth movement away from some of the strongest evidence that we have that 9/11 was an inside job. So I ask, is my supporting the evidence based on observations of a large plane impact really synonymous with supporting the official story that Connie Honjour manually flew AA-77 into the Pentagon after overpowering the pilots and took everyone by surprise? It does not. Supporting a large plane impact does not mean that the large plane was AA-77. It does not mean that the large plane was piloted by Connie Honjour. It does not mean that the Pentagon command structure was taken by surprise. It does not mean that NORAD should be excused from its failure to respond with fighter planes according to standard procedures. And it does not mean that we have thrown away, quote, our strongest evidence that we have that 9/11 was an inside job. When I've gone back to the original source materials for 9/11, I've heard people talk about explosions at the World Trade Center. The media censorship stopped all that discussion about the explosives by the second day. When I've gone back to the Pentagon coverage of 9/11, I have not heard any raw footage that clearly suggests an alternative to a large aircraft flying along Columbia Pike. Nothing from that day clearly supports the north of Citgo flight path. Such descriptions would have been prominent in the statements by witnesses if they were true. So our own confirmation bias, a desire to show that 9/11 was an inside job, apparently leads some in our 9/11 truth movement to adopt the wishful hypotheses that are not supported by the evidence and to ridicule those who have actually looked at the evidence. In conclusion, I want to ratchet down the volume of those who say that no large aircraft hit the Pentagon. At a minimum, the evidence is very supportive of this hypothesis, and in fact, it is actually hard to argue against the large plane impact. I'm hopeful that this debate will make a difference and encourage others to question their own confirmation biases, a bias that I had to overcome when I really began to look at the evidence. Furthermore, I look forward to having a debate with a champion for one of the no plane or plane flyover proponents. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. And finally, Barbara, with her 2.5-minute summary. Go ahead, Barbara. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And again, thank you so much for the opportunity of this interaction with so many of you from the movement. Where I was when my time was up last time was the importance of the principle of severability. The main finding of my work is pre-placed explosives at the Pentagon. And this is also, as we know from the work of so many people, also the main story at the World Trade Center. We know at the World Trade Center that a plane impact was just a cover story for the destruction and collapse of the buildings in New York City. This is also the case at the Pentagon. My work shows it's also the case at the Pentagon. And that primary finding of pre-placed explosives as the real story at the Pentagon as at the World Trade Center stands independently of whether or not my separate finding that, yes, there was a large plane destroyed at the Pentagon, but not at the official story placed on the wall or at the official story time, is completely independent of that main finding. So I wanted to make that clear. I also wanted to make clear that my position is what I call a hybrid or a middle position. between that of the citizens' investigation team and that of the official storyline advocates like Wayne, at least in this debate. Mine is a hybrid or middle position that there was a plane destruction, a large plane destruction at the Pentagon, but no flyover, that the plane was destroyed instead. That it was destroyed near the wall, but did not impact the wall. What is some of the strongest evidence of that? There was no seismic signal found for by any of the five closest readout stations to the Pentagon for an impact that the Pentagon Building Performance Report and the ASCE found was almost 100% on the ground floor, effectively at the ground. And yet we know that there were seismic. And yet we know that there were seismic signals for impacts at the World Trade Center, dozens and dozens and dozens of floors higher than the ground. So the very fact that there was no seismic signal, and yet there's all the evidence of a large plane destruction, led me to the necessary conclusion, which was shocking to me, that a plane had to have been actually destroyed at the Pentagon, but did not impact the wall. And like Wayne, I look forward to this series of debates and look forward to also debating with the SIT position. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Barbara. And with that, we conclude this debate. And first of all, I want to thank our two debaters who have done an outstanding job of presenting two positions and contending very forcibly with one another as to what happened at the Pentagon. Thank you also to Craig for his timing for keeping people on track. And now we're ready to entertain 20 minutes of a participant comment and questions to our commendable participants, remembering that each person will have no more than 1 minute to make a comment or a question, and a response from the appropriate participants will also be limited to 1 minute. So we will go ahead and create a stack for the people that would like to make a question, pose a question, or make a comment, and that is open now. So who would like to be on the stack?
Dick Atlas.
Robin.
Robin. Dick Atlee. Who else?
Craig.
Craig. Who else?
Rich O'Coin.
Rich O'Coin. Rich O'Coin. Who else? Okay, I've got Robin, Dick, Craig, and Rich O'Coin. Who else would be elected to be on the stack?
Adam Syed.
Adam Syed. Who else?
If you have to unmute to say if you want to be on the stack.
I just did, and this is Lorenzo Fine.
Lorenzo Fine. Okay, who else?
Possibly Lynn Bradbury.
Lynn Bradbury. Who else? Okay, we've got Robin, Dick, Craig, Richard Coyne, Adam Syed, Lorenzo Fine, and Lynn Bradbury. Is there anybody else like to be on the stack before we proceed?
All right.
I'm sorry? Well, okay, so Robin, you're first.
Yeah, thank you. Very good job, both of you. I'm just sort of going to make a position statement here. I feel that the 9/11 truth community is in a good place right now. This is sort of the last frontier. Specific shout out to the to a good, healthy approach at new evidence held up by Cheryl Curtis in her dealing with the 28 minutes. And a shout out to Dave Schlesinger, who carries the biggest message, the most important message in 9/11 truth, and that is outreach. I really simply want to make a statement where I have come from, being full circle all the way around. Generally, I cannot accept the flight data or radar information, and I'm moving to discovering a more thorough analysis of eyewitness reports. Here's where I sit. I believe that there was a impact of a large two underwinged air vehicle at the Pentagon that first hit the generator and then struck the side of the Pentagon in a slight left bank. No, I do not connect that with the C-ring and do not connect that with the ladder pole.
Time is up.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Robin. Okay. Dick, you're next.
I'd like to ask both of them
and I certainly appreciate the, what they've done here. But one thing that, that I think would be helpful is to clarify the various reports about whether there was a significant amount of and smell of jet fuel in that area. I've heard contradictory reports, and I'm wondering what each of them has to say about that, since that was
okay.
a great deal of impact on whether there was a large plane that hit the wall.
Thank you, Dick. Okay, that's the question. Barbara, would you like to go first?
I think Wayne should go first, because he's always gone first.
All right, go ahead.
I don't think I've researched that enough to say much. I think Barbara's done the most research on this, and they talk about Fordyce and other things, but I think jet fuel was also mentioned, but I have not researched it sufficiently. Sorry, Dick.
Okay, thank you. Wait, Barbara?
Okay, well, the first thing that comes to mind, of course, this is spontaneous, but the first thing that comes to mind is, yes, there were lots of reports of you know, smoky, smelly fuel of that kind, but the problem is that you have a diesel generator trailer that's billowing with smoke from at least 9, 34, and 10 seconds. You can't really be sure that that wasn't what people were referring to. Also, a leading edge of the wings, the official story has those wing tanks full of jet fuel hitting 5 light bulbs in a row that we know that would have sheared off the wing and, at a very minimum, spilled massive amounts of jet fuel over the launch during the approach before it would impact the wall if the official story were true. And there is simply no report by any witness of jet fuel on the lawn. My final comment is, and I mentioned this is in my PowerPoint to it in the other part of the debate, but the temperature, the temperatures that actually melt the concrete and the external columns and some of the internal columns, and you have those temperatures, just as at the World Trade Center, are far, far higher than you can get by burning jet fuel and office fires, far, far higher. So that would be my comment.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. Craig, you're next.
Yeah, this is the question I guess both can ask, but first, I guess, for Wayne. If I understood you correctly, Wayne, at the beginning, you said that you thought it was not credible, the idea that the plane would have been level and just above the ground was not credible, and that what we saw in the video did not represent what you think would have happened. And I guess my question then is why would the video that was released be doctored to show a level impact if, in fact, an actual impact had taken place? Why would they need to doctor the video?
Well, so my response to that is I was discarding that as a point of evidence because it is so controversial, and it doesn't, and while it would be nice if it would be supportive, it has enough problems that it appears to have been a doctored, or it could very well be a doctored photo or a series of photos. Reason for showing it is you want to show that something hit it, and they didn't want to provide too much information. I don't know. All I'm saying is that with the wrong date, with the problem that Mizuko pointed out, and also with the fact that it's not reasonable to expect that the plane would have tried to level off just before. Do a really critical maneuver like that when all you have to do is just fly straight down and continue on a downward sloping so that you could get the most momentum. To try to screw it up and level out doesn't seem reasonable, and the photos don't pick that up. And so it seems unsupportable. That's all.
Time is up. Okay, thank you for the response. Richard Coyne.
Just a minute. I think that was to both of us.
I'm sorry?
I think that question was to both of us. I'd like to respond.
Well, he only asked it to Wayne.
Well,
so
I did say that folks could answer. I kind of did say that.
Okay. All right. Go ahead, Barbara.
Yeah, he did.
I mean, I think that in general, you should open the responses to both of us, regardless.
No, in that case, you did request it of Wayne, so I only gave it to Wayne. But in your, since you did.
Okay. Yeah, I'd like to respond. Go ahead, Barbara. Respond to that as well.
Yeah,
so I would refer people to my slides 16 and 17. They're very, very important slides that address this question. There's no question whatsoever remaining that the critical frame 23 of both of the two security camera videos, the outside security camera videos, were doctored. We know that at least one of the two were, as a result of the digital video analysis of one of Terry Misson's colleagues in France, and that is documented in Mizuko's 9/11 the New Pearl Harbor. But my own new analysis, which is much simpler, and that's in slide 17, I realized, like a bolt of lightning, a big light bulb, not too long ago, it only took me over 14 years to realize how simple the argument was, but it turns out that those security cameras take frames at 1 frame per second. And the official story has a plane coming in, a large plane coming in at about 560 miles per hour at the end. You can do the math, and Mark Snyder did the math. Okay, finish the sentence. Mark Snyder did the math. And the circle, the very minimum distance away from the alleged impact point of frame 23 is much further out beyond the Pentagon than either of the images in frame 23, so proving they were both doctored. Both of them were doctored.
Okay, thank you, Barbara. Yeah. Adam Taib. Wait a minute, sorry. Richard Kahn. You haven't gone yet. Richard Kahn, go ahead.
Thanks. My question is, if the plane didn't strike the part of the Pentagon where the official story put it, then where would a large plane fit a pitch?
I take it that's to me, Barbara?
Well, like you said, I mean, both can answer, but I think you're obviously directed more to you.
Yes, okay, so I'll begin then. Okay, if I understand your question, it was a little bit scratchy. If it didn't hit at the official story, like impact point and column 14 in wedge 1, which is what Wayne advocates, along with everyone else who advocates official story height, where would it have? But the whole point of behind the smoke curtain is to marshal the evidence that a plane was destroyed further to the north or the left, closer to the Pentagon heliport, just before it would have otherwise hit the wall. And it probably was destroyed by some kind of remote signal that I believe, although it is not proven, but I believe that remote signal was probably put out by the military helicopter that was buzzing around the west side of the Pentagon at precisely that time and took off and left literally 3 seconds after the destruction of the state by the heliport. That's the answer to your question.
Thank you, Barbara. Wayne, do you have any response to that?
Well, I'll simply say that there's no evidence for such a plane having exploded in advance of or in front of the building, because if it was at a very high altitude or four stories as the ground effect argument would put it, you'd have debris over a very, very large range, including large parts, including wings and things like that, scattered around. So there's no evidence that a plane exploded outside the building, impacting the wall, knocking it down, and going inside the building. The momentum continuing through the building, into the building, is just enough, and all it had to do was get inside the wall for virtually all of it to disappear. And that is, with the exception of the explosion afterwards, that was witnessed by people on the street, there was no other significant debris. So that's all I'll say for now. Over.
Okay, thank you.
Could I rebut that?
No, you can't. No, sorry, Barbara. No, you can't. I'm sorry. Adam Saeed, it's your turn.
Yeah, this question is directed to Wayne. Wayne, I think I briefly heard you mention in your closing comments you did briefly mention the north of Sitco flight path, and I'm just kind of curious, could you clarify your exact position on why exactly you think it is that the unit came in and struck the building specifically on the official flight path and hit those five specific light poles, and what would be your logic as to why all of those witnesses who reported the plane being not just north of the gas station, but crossing from the south of Columbia Pike to north of Columbia Pike and then flying directly over the Navy Annex as well, all of that contradicts the official flight path. And this seems to me, I've watched all of Citizen Investigation Team's interviews and a few other independent interviews, and this flight path to me is pretty confirmed beyond a shadow of a doubt. So I'm curious as to how you grapple with that particular cumulative set of eyewitness testimony.
Well, you know, I'll take the statements of Daryl Donnelly, and if you go to my slide 19, because he's the guy that took the photographs. He said that it went over his head off the passenger side. Slide 19 showed you exactly where it is. That's where he was standing. All the other witnesses that I've heard or reviewed say that is the flight path, except the CIT videos. And I must say that I was taken in. That was what I was going to promote in my cable access show, the CIT north of. But as I dug into it, I found that we have two sets of histories that are contradictory. And to me, by far, the strongest evidence is the witnesses of the day, not 6 years later, the witnesses of the day, and this is where they reported the plane having come and impacted. Over.
May I respond to that?
I guess, Barbara, go ahead.
Yeah. Regarding the north side versus the south side or the official story path, I would just like to say that as I mentioned before, because the witnesses, even though there are about 180 of them, they're all over the map. They say large plane, small plane, missile with wings, a plane that only seats about 12 people. It goes on and on. White plane, silver plane. You have to choose. And one of the clinchers for me for preferring the north path is not only the sit witnesses, but the independent testimony of a witness, a very critical witness that sit doesn't even include, and that is Alan Wallace. Alan Wallace was one of the two firefighters who were outside the building and was almost killed by the plane that came in and exploded near the heliport. And he was very, very clear in his written report about it that it came, quote, north of the clover leaf. And north of the clover leaf simply has to be a north path. It has to be a north path.
Okay. Thank you. Lorenzo Klein.
I'm going to pass to Rich right now. Rich
O'Connor. All right. And Liz. In your last.
Hi. Did you say Lynn?
Yes.
Okay. I just remember hearing somebody knowledgeable, I don't remember who it was, and a long time ago, mentioning that they smelled a strong smell of cordite, and I would just like to ask Barbara and Wayne if he wants, what does that mean?
Okay. Wayne, you want to go first?
Here comes, somebody needs to mute, if you would. A lot of noise on the phone. Okay, starting my response to that. The smell of cordite was felt by many, many, many people, including the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He said that the smell of cordite was overwhelming. And cordite is a coal-burning explosive that smells nothing like jet fuel, nothing like jet fuel at all, which is just one of the many, many lines of evidence in behind the smoke curtain, and also some of them that I include in my PowerPoint for this debate. That there were independent pre-placed inside the building, as well as outside the building, explosives that are the main story of the Pentagon. So that would be mine. And I would like to add one other comment, and that is earlier, Wayne made a comment that shows that if he doesn't understand, I don't believe, my main position, and that is he said that there's no evidence of a plane explosion because there was, evidence of a plane impact at the official story. Alleged impact point, that's the whole point. It's one or the other. And there's lots of evidence of a plane debris around the heliport and between the heliport and the wall. There's lots of evidence. And my position is simply that that was caused by a plane being destroyed before it would have otherwise hit the wall. And we have multiple witnesses. Left wing hit the helipad before it exploded, and you would expect
okay.
that. If the left wing hit the helipad.
Okay. All right, then, Wayne, would you like to respond to Lynn's question?
Yeah. I have no independent confirmation about the court. I've seen the report, and one of the things that I did include in my PowerPoints was the ASCE comments about the slab on the second floor being uplifted, and that was on my slide 39. That suggests that there was explosives. And then Barbara, of course, is has done a lot more research on what happened deep inside the Pentagon in the A and B ring. And there's a lot of devastation. And from my independent research, it seems like that was, in fact, something that happened. But I'm not going to talk about that anymore. That's all I've got. Thanks.
All right. Thanks, Wayne. All right. Well, we've reached the end of this segment of our program tonight. And I first of all want to thank both of our opponents, Wayne for the affirmative and Barbara for the negative, in debating the question of whether a large plane impacted the Pentagon. And we are now, I want to remind all of you that you're invited to go to the linked survey to weigh in on whether you think Wayne or Barbara or neither or both presented the more credible and cogent argument for tonight's debate. And we'll publish those results hopefully in the minutes, but in any case, at some point, we'll let people know how the debate went tonight. Now, we're ready to move on to the second part of tonight's